Chapter 17.
"Jehoshaphat," said Tom Skelton on the parapet, "we whistled all the stone griffins and demons here. Now Pipkin's lost again. I was thinking, why can't we whistle him?"
Moundshroud laughed, though his cape boomed on the night wind and his dry bones jangled inside his skin.
"Boys, look around. He's still here."
"Where?"
"Here,"
mourned a small, faraway voice. The boys crickled their spines looking over the parapet, cracked their necks, staring up.
"Look and find, lads. Hide and seek."
And even in seeking, they could not help but enjoy once more the turbulent slates of the cathedral, all fringed with horrors and deliciously ugly with trapped beasts. Where was Pipkin among all those dark sea creatures with gills gaped open like mouths for an eternal gasp and sigh? Where among all those lovely chiseled nightmares cut from the gallstones of night lurks and monsters cracked out of old earthquakes, vomited up from mad volcanoes which cooled themselves to frights and deliriums?
"Here,"
wailed a far, small, familiar voice again, and way down on a ledge, halfway to the earth, the boys, squinting, thought they saw one small, round, beautiful angel devil face with a familiar eye, a familiar nose, a friendly and familiar mouth.
"Pipkin!"
Shouting, they ran down stairways along dark corridors until they reached a ledge. Far out there on the windy air, above a very narrow walkway indeed, was that small face, lovely among so much ugliness. Tom went first, not looking down, spread-eagling himself. Ralph followed. The rest inched along in a line.
"Watch out, Tom. Don't fall."
"I'm not fallin'. Here's Pip."
And there he was, standing in a line directly under the out-thrust stone mask, the bust, the head of a gargoyle. They looked up at that mighty fine profile, that great nub nose, that unbearded cheek, that fuzzy cap of marbled hair.
"Pipkin."
"Pip, for cry-yi, what you doing here?"
called Tom. Pip said nothing. His mouth was cut stone.
It's just rock," said Ralph. "Just a gargoyle carved here a long time ago. Looks like Pipkin."
"No, I heard him call. But how—"
And then the wind gave them the answer. It blew around the high corners of Notre Dame. It fluted in the ears and piped out the gaping mouths of the gargoyles.
Whispered
Pipkin's voice. The hair stood up on the backs of their necks. Murmured the stone mouth.
"Listen, there it is,"
said Ralph excitedly.
"Shut up,"
cried Tom.
"Pip, next time the wind blows, tell us, how do we help? What got you here? How do we get you down?"
Silence. The boys clung to the rock cliff face of the great cathedral. Then another swoop of wind sucked by, drew their breaths, and whistled in the carved stone boy's teeth.
"One,"
said Pip's voice.
"Question,"
whispered Pip's voice again after a pause. Silence. More wind.
"Atta."
The boys waited.
"Time."
"One question at a time,"
translated Tom. The boys hooted with laughter. That was Pip, all right.
"Okay."
Tom gathered his spit.
"What are you doing up here?"
The wind blew sadly, and the voice spoke as from deep in an old well.
"Been so many places in just a few hours."
The boys waited, grinding their teeth.
"Speak up, Pipkin."
The wind came back to mourn in the open stone mouth. But the wind had died. It began to rain. And this was best of all. For the raindrops ran cold in Pipkin's stone ears and out along his nose and fountained from his marble mouth, so that he began to utter syllables in liquid tongues with clear, cold rainwater words.
"Hey, this is better."
He spouted mist. He sprayed quick rain.
You should have been where I'd been. Gosh, I was buried for a mummy. I was trapped in a dog. We guessed that was you, Pipkin. And now here,
said the rain in the ear, the rain in the nose, the rain in the clear, dripping marble mouth.
Gosh, golly, funny, strange inside this rock with all these devils and demons for pals. And 10 minutes from now, who knows where I'll be, higher up or buried deep? Where, Pipkin?
The boys jostled. The rain squalled and beat them so they almost tilted and fell off the ledge.
Are you dead, Pipkin?
No, not yet, said the cold rain in his mouth. Part of me in a hospital a long way off home. Part of me in that old Egyptian tomb. Part of me in the grass in England. Part of me here. Part of me in a worse place.
Where?
I don't know. I don't... Oh, gosh, 1 minute I'm yelling laughs. The next I'm scared. Now, just now, this very minute, I guess I know I'm scared. Help me, guys. Help. Oh, please.
Rain poured out his eyes like tears. The boys reached up to touch Pipkin's chin as best they could, but before they could touch, a lightning bolt struck out of the sky. It flashed blue and white. The entire cathedral shook. The boys had to grab demons' horns and angels' wings on either side so as not to be knocked off. Thunder and smoke, and a great scattering of rock and stone. Pipkin's face was gone. Knocked off by the lightning bolt, it fell down through space to shatter the ground below.
Pipkin!
But there below, on the cathedral porch stones, were only flinty fire sparks blowing away, and a fine gargoyle dust. Nose, chin, stone lip, hard cheek, bright eye, carved fine ear, all whipped away on the wind in chaff and shrapnel dust. They saw something like a spirit smoke, a bloom of gunpowder blowed drifting south and west.
Mexico.
Mountshroud, one of the few men in all the world who knew how to uttered the word.
Mexico?
Asked Tom. The last grand travel of this night, said Mountshroud, still uttering, savoring the syllables. Whistle, boys, scream like tigers, cry like panthers, shriek like carnivore.
Scream? Cry? Shriek?
Reassemble the kite, lads, the kite of autumn. Paste back the fangs and fiery eyes and bloody talons. Yell the wind to sew it all together and ride us high and long and last. Bray, boys, whimper, trumpet, shout.
The boys hesitated. Mountshroud ran along the ledge like someone racketing a picket fence. He knocked each boy with his knee and elbow. The boys fell, and falling gave each his particular whimper, shriek, or scream. Plummeting down through cold space, they felt the tail of a murderous peacock flourish beneath, all blood-filled eye. 10,000 burning eyes came up. Hovered suddenly round a windy corner of gargoyles, the autumn kite, freshly assembled, broke their fall. They grabbed, they held to rim, to edge, to cross struts, to trap drum rattling papers, to bits and tatters and shreds of old meat-breath lion mouth and stale blood tiger's maw. Mountshroud leaped up to grab. This time he was the tail. The autumn kite hovered, waiting, 8 boys upon its billowing surf of teeth and eyes. Mountshroud tuned his ear. Hundreds of miles away, beggars ran down Irish roads, starving, asking for food from door to door. Their cries rose in the night. Fred Fryer, in his beggar's costume, heard.
That way. Let's fly there.
No. No time. Listen. Thousands of miles away, there was a faint tap-hammering of Death Watch beetles ticking the night. The coffin makers of Mexico. Mountshroud smiled. In the streets with their long boxes and nails and little hammers, tapping, tapping.
Pipkin?
Whispered the boys. We hear, said Mountshroud, and to Mexico we go. The autumn kite boomed them away on a 1,000-foot tidal wave of wind. The gargoyles, fluting in their stone nostrils, gaping their marble lips, used that same wind to wail them farewell. Chapter 18. They hung above Mexico. They hung above an island in that lake in Mexico. They heard dogs barking in the night far below. They saw a few boats on the moonlit lake moving like water insects. They heard a guitar playing and a man singing in a high, sad voice. A long way off across the dark borders of land in the United States, packs of children, mobs of dogs ran laughing, barking, knocking from door to door, their hands full of sweet bags of treasure, wild with joy on Halloween night.
"But here," whispered Tom.
"Here what?" asked Mound Shroud, hovering at his elbow.
"Oh, why here?"
"And down through all of South America?"
"Yes, south. Here and south, all the cemeteries, all the graveyards are..."
"Full of candlelight," Tom thought. "A 1,000 candles in this cemetery, 100 candles in that graveyard, 10,000 small flickering lights farther on 100 miles, 5,000 miles down to the very tip of Argentina.
Is that the way they celebrate?"
"El Día de los Muertos. How's your grade school Spanish, Tom?"
"The Day of the Dead Ones?"
"Caramba, sí. Kite, disassemble." Swooping down, the kite flew apart for a final time. The boys tumbled on the stony shore of the quiet lake. Mists hung over the waters. Far across the lake they could see an unlit tomb yard. There were, as yet, no candles burning in it. Out of the mists, a dugout canoe moved silently without oars, as if the tide touched it across the waters. A tall figure in a gray winding sheet stood motionless in one end of the boat. The boat nudged the grassy shore softly. The boys gasped, for, as far as they could tell, only darkness was cupped inside the hood of the shrouded figure.
Mr. Mound Shroud?
They knew it had to be him. But he said nothing. Only the faintest firefly of a grin flickered within the cowl. A bony hand gestured. The boys tumbled into the boat.
"Shh," whispered a voice from the empty hood.
The figure gestured again, and, touched by the wind, they blew across the dark waters under a night sky filled with the billion never-before-seen fires of the stars. Far off on that dark island there was a prickle of guitar sound. A single candle was lit in the graveyard. Somewhere someone blew a musical sound on a flute. Another candle was lit among the tombstones. Someone sang a single word of a song. A third candle was touched to life by a flaming match, and the faster the boat moved, the more guitar notes sounded and the more candles were lit high among the mounds on the stony hills. 12, 100, 1,000 candles flared until it looked as if the great Andromeda star cluster had fallen out of the sky and tilted itself to rest here in the middle of almost midnight Mexico. The boat struck the shore. The boys, surprised, fell out. They spun about, but Mound Shroud was gone. Only his winding sheet lay empty in the boat. A guitar called to them. A voice sang to them. A road like a river of white stones and white rocks led up through the town that was like a graveyard to the graveyard that was like a town. For there were no people in the town. The boys reached the low wall of the graveyard and then the huge lacework iron gates. They took hold of the iron rungs and stared in.
"Why?" gasped Tom. "I never ever seen the like."
For now they knew why the town was empty. Because the graveyard was full. By every grave was a woman kneeling to place gardenias or azaleas or marigolds in a frame upon the stone. By every grave knelt a daughter who was lighting a new candle or lighting a candle that had just blown out. By every grave was a quiet boy with bright brown eyes and in one hand a small papier-mâché funeral parade glued to a shingle and in the other hand a papier-mâché skeleton head which rattled with rice or nuts inside.
"Look,"
whispered Tom. There were hundreds of graves. There were hundreds of women. There were hundreds of daughters. There were hundreds of sons. And hundreds upon thousands of candles. The whole graveyard was one swarm of candleshine, as if a population of fireflies had heard of a grand conglomeration and had flown here to settle in and flame upon the stones and light the brown faces and the dark eyes and the black hair. "Boy," said Tom, half to himself, "at home we never go to the graveyard except maybe Memorial Day once a year, and then at high noon, full sun, no fun. This now, this is fun."
"Sure," Whisper yelled everyone. "Mexican Halloweens are better than ours."
For on every grave were plates of cookies shaped like funeral priests, or skeletons, or ghosts, waiting to be nibbled by living people, or by ghosts that might come along toward dawn, hungry and forlorn. No one knew. No one said. And each boy inside the graveyard, next to his sister and mother, put down the miniature funeral on the grave, and they could see the tiny candy person inside the tiny wooden coffin placed before a tiny altar with tiny candles, and around the tiny coffin stood tiny altar boys with peanuts for heads and eyes painted on the peanut shells. And before the altar stood a priest with a corn nut for a head and a walnut for a stomach, and on the altar was a photograph of the person in the coffin, a real person once, remembered now.
"Better and still better," whispered Ralph.
"Cuevos,"
sang a far voice up the hill. Inside the graveyard, voices echoed the song. Leaning against the graveyard walls, some with guitars in their hands or bottles, were the men of the village.
"Cuevos de los muertos,"
sang the faraway voice.
"Cuevos de los muertos,"
sang the men in the shadows inside the gate.
"Skulls,"
translated Tom.
"The skulls of the dead."
"Skulls, sweet sugar skulls, sweet candy skulls, the skulls of the dead ones,"
sang the voice coming close now. And down the hill, treading softly in shadow, came a hunchbacked vendor of skulls.
"No, not hunched," said Tom half aloud. "A whole load of skulls on his back," cried Ralph.
"Sweet skulls, sweet white crystal sugar candy skulls,"
sang the vendor, his face hidden under a vast sombrero. But it was Mound Shroud's voice that sweetly piped. And carried from a long bamboo over his shoulder, hung on black threads, were dozens and scores of sugar skulls as big as their own heads, and each skull was inscribed.
"Names, names," sang the old vendor. "Tell me your name, I give you your skull."
"Tom,"
said Tom. The old man plucked forth a skull. On it, in huge letters, was written, "Tom." Tom took and held his own name, his own sweet, edible skull, in his fingers.
"Ralph."
And a skull with the name Ralph written on it was tossed forth. Ralph caught it, laughing. In a swift game, the bony hand plucked, tossed, white skull after skull sweetly on the cool air. Henry Hank, Fred, George, Hackles, J.J., Wally. The boys, bombarded, squealed and danced about, pelted with their own skulls and their own proud names, sugar-encrusted upon each white brow of those skulls. They caught and almost dropped this splendid bombardment. They stood, mouths wide open, staring at the sugary death sweets in their gummy hands, and from within the graveyard, way high male soprano voices sang,
"Roberto Maria Conchita Tomas, calavera, calavera, sweet candy bones to eat, your name on the snow-white sweet skull, you hurry down the street, you buy from the piled high white hills in the square, buy and eat. Chew your name, what a treat."
The boys lifted the sweet skulls in their fingers. "Bite the T and the O and the M, Tom. Chew the H, swallow A, digest N, choke on K, Hank." Their mouths watered. But was it poison they held? Would you guess? Such happiness, such joy, as each boy dines on darkness, makes a meal of the night. What delight! Snap a bite. Go ahead, munch that fine candy head. The boys tapped the sweet candy names to their lips and were about to bite when, Olé! A mob of Mexican boys ran up yelling their names, seizing at skulls. Tomas! And Tom saw Tomas run off with his named skull. Hey, said Tom, he sort of looked like me.
Did he? Said the vendor of skulls.
Enrique,
shouted a small Indian boy seizing Henry Hank's skull. Enrique pelted down the hill.
He looked like me, said Henry Hank.
He did, said Mound Shroud. Quick, boys, see what they're up to. Hold on to your sweet craniums and get.
The boys jumped, for at that very moment an explosion hit the streets below in the town, then another explosion and another. Fireworks! The boys took a last look in at the flowers, the graves, cookies, foods, skulls upon graves, miniature funerals with miniature bodies and coffins, at candles, crouched women, lonely boys, girls, men, then whirled and exploded down the hill toward the firecrackers. Into the plaza, Tom and Ralph and all the other costumed boys raced, panting. They jolted to a halt and danced about as 1,000 miniature firecrackers banged around their shoes. The lights were on. Suddenly the shops were open. And Tomas and Jose Juan and Enrique were lighting and tossing the firecrackers with yells.
Hey, Tom, from me, Tomas!
Tom saw his own eyes glinting from the wild boy's face.
Hey, Henry! This from Enrique, bang! JJ, this, bang, from Jose Juan.
Oh, this is the best Halloween of all, said Tom. And it was. For never in all their wild travels had so much happened to be seen, smelled, touched. In every alley and door and window were mounds of sugar skulls with beautiful names. From every alley came the tap-tap of Death Watch beetle coffin makers nailing, hammering, tapping coffin lids like wooden drums in the night. On every corner were stacks of newspapers with pictures of the mayor and his body painted in like a skeleton, or the president and his body all bones, or the loveliest maiden dressed like a xylophone and death playing a tune on her musical ribs. Calavera, 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 the song drifted down the hill. See the politicians buried in the news. Rest in peace beneath their names, such is fame. See the skeletons juggling, standing high on each other's shoulders, preaching sermons, wrestling, playing soccer. Little runners, little jumpers, little skeletons that leap about and fall. Did you ever dream that death could be whittled down so very small? And the song was true. Wherever the boys looked were the miniature acrobats, trapeze performers, basketball players, priests, jugglers, tumblers, but all were skeletons hand to hand, bony shoulder to shoulder, and all small enough for you to carry in your fingers. And over there in a window was a whole microscopic jazz band with a skeleton trumpeter and a skeleton drummer and a skeleton playing a tuba no bigger than a soup spoon and a skeleton conductor with a bright cap on his head and a baton in his hand and tiny music pouring out of the tiny horns. Never before had the boys seen so many bones. Bones, laughed everyone. Oh, lovely bones. The song began to fade. Hold the dark holiday in your palms. Bite it, swallow it, and survive. Come out the far black tunnel of El Día de Muerte, and be glad, ah, so glad you are alive. Calavera, calavera. The newspapers, bordered in black, blew away in white funerals on the wind. The Mexican boys ran away up the hill to their families.
Oh, strange, funny, strange, whispered Tom.
What? Said Ralph at his elbow.
Up in Illinois, we've forgotten what it's all about. I mean, the dead up in our town tonight, heck, they're forgotten. Nobody remembers. Nobody cares. Nobody goes to sit and talk to them.
Boy, that's lonely. That's really sad. But here, why, shucks, it's both happy and sad.
It's all firecrackers and skeleton toys down here in the plaza, and up in that graveyard now where all the Mexican dead folks with the families visiting, and flowers and candles and singing and candy. I mean, it's almost like Thanksgiving, huh? And everyone sat down to dinner, but only half the people able to eat. But that's no mind, they're there. It's like holding hands at a seance with your friends, but some of the friends gone.
Oh, heck, Ralph.
Yeah, said Ralph, nodding behind his mask.
Heck. Look, oh, look, look there, said J.J.
The boys looked. On top of a mound of white sugar skulls was one with the name Pipkin on it. Pipkin's sweet skull, but nowhere in all the explosions and dancing bones and flying skulls was there so much as one dust speck or whimper or shadow of Pip. They had grown so accustomed to Pip's leaping up in fantastic surprises, on the sides of Notre Dame or weighted down in gold sarcophagi, that they had expected him, like a jack-in-the-box, to pop from a mound of sugar skulls, flap sheets in their faces, cry dirges, but no. Suddenly, no Pip. No Pip at all. And maybe no Pip ever again. The boys shivered. A cold wind blew fog up from the lake. Chapter 19. Along the dark night street, around a corner, came a woman bearing over her shoulders twin scoops of mounded charcoals, burning. From these heaps of pink-burning coals, firefly sparks scattered and blew in the wind. Where she passed on bare feet, she left a trail of little sparks which died. Without a word, shuffling, she went around another corner into an alley, gone. After her came a man carrying, on his head, lightly, lightly, a small coffin. It was a box made of plain white wood, nailed shut. On the sides and top of the box were pinned cheap silver rosettes, handmade silk and paper flowers. Inside the box was... The boys stared as the funeral parade of two went by. Two, thought Tom. The man in the box, yes, and the thing inside the box. The man, his face solemn, balancing the coffin on top of his head, walked tall into the nearby church.
Was,
stuttered Tom.
Was that Pip again inside that box?
What do you think, lad? Asked Mound Shroud.
I don't know, cried Tom. I only know I had enough. The night's been too long. I seen too much. I know everything. Gosh, everything.
Yeah,
said everyone, clustering close, shivering.
And we've got to get home, don't we? What about Pipkin? Where is he? Is he alive or dead? Can we save him? Is he lost? Are we too late? What do we do? What?
Cried everyone. And the same questions flew and burst from their mouths and welled in their eyes. They all took hold of Mound Shroud as if to press the answer from him, yank it out his elbows.
What do we do?
To save Pipkin? One last thing. Look up in this tree.
Dangling from the tree were a dozen Halloween piñatas, devils, ghosts, skulls, witches that swayed in the wind.
Break your piñata, boys.
Sticks were thrust in their hands.
Strike.
Yelling, they struck. The piñatas exploded. And from the skeleton piñata, a thousand small skeleton leaves fell in a shower. They swarmed on Tom. The wind blew skeletons, leaves, and Tom away. And from the mummy piñata fell hundreds of frail Egyptian mummies which rushed away into the sky, Ralph with them. And so each boy struck, and cracked and let down small vinegar gnat dancing images of himself so that devils, witches, ghosts shrieked and seized, and all the boys and leaves went tumbling through the sky with Mound Shroud laughing after. They ricocheted in the final alleys of the town. They banged and skipped like stones across the lake waters to land rolling in a jumble of knees and elbows on a yet farther hill. They sat up. They found themselves in the middle of an abandoned graveyard with no people, no lights, only stones like immense wedding cakes frosted with old moonlight.
and as they watched, Mound Shroud, landing light on his feet in a swift, quiet motion, bent. He reached for an iron rung in the earth. He pulled. With a shriek of hinges, a trapdoor in the earth gaped wide. The boys came to stand at the edge of the big hole.
"Cat,"
stuttered Tom.
"Catacombs?"
"Catacombs." Mound Shroud pointed. Stairs led down into a dry, dust earth. The boys swallowed hard.
"Is Pip down there?"
"Go bring him up, boys."
"Is he alone down there?"
"No. Things are with him. Things."
"Who goes first? Not me."
Silence.
"Me,"
said Tom at last. He put his foot on the first step down. He sank into the earth. He took another step. Then, suddenly, he was gone. The others followed. They went down the steps in single file, and with each step down the dark got darker, and with each step down the silence grew more silent, and with each step down the night became deep as a well and very black indeed. And with each step down, the shadows waited and seemed to lean from walls. And with each step down, strange things seemed to smile at them from the long cave which waited below. Bats seemed to be hanging clustered just over their heads, squeaking so high you could not hear them. Only dogs might hear, have hysterics, jump out of their skins and run off. With each step down, the town got farther away, and the earth and all the nice people of the earth, even the graveyard above, seemed far away. They felt lonely. They felt so alone they wanted to cry. For each step down was a billion miles lost from life and warm beds and good candlelight and mother's voices and father's pipe smoke and clearing his voice in the night, which made you feel good knowing he was there somewhere in the dark. Alive and turning in his sleep and able to hit anything with his fists if it had to be hit. Each step down, and at last, at the bottom of the stairs, they peered into the long cave, the long hall, and all the people were there and very quiet. They had been quiet for a long time. Some of them had been quiet for 30 years. Some had been silent for 40 years. Some had been completely mum for 70 years.
"There they are,"
said Tom.
"The mummies,"
someone whispered.
"The mummies."
A long line of them standing against the walls. 50 mummies standing against the right wall. 50 mummies standing against the left wall. And 4 mummies waiting at the far end in the dark. 104 dry-as-dust mummies, more alone than they, more lonely than they might ever feel in life, abandoned here, left below, far from dog barks and fireflies and the sweet singing of men and guitars in the night.
"Oh, boy," said Tom. "All those poor people. I heard of them."
"What?"
"Their folks couldn't pay the rent on their graves. So the gravedigger dug up these people and put them down here. The earth is so dry it makes mummies out of them. And look, see how they're dressed."
The boys looked and saw that some of the ancient people were dressed like farmers, and some like peasant maids, and some like businessmen in old dark suits, and one even like a bullfighter in his dusty suit of lights. But inside their suits they were all thin bones and skin and spider-web and dust that shook down through their ribs if you sneezed and trembled them.
"What's that? What?
Sss." Everyone listened. They peered into the long vault. All the mummies looked back with empty eyes. All the mummies waited with empty hands. Someone was weeping at the far end of the long dark hall. Came the sound.
"Oh,"
came the crying, and the small voice wept.
"That's
Why, that's Pip. Only heard him cry once, but that's him, Pipkin. And he's trapped there in the catacomb.
The boys stared, and they saw, 100 feet away, crouched down in a corner, trapped at the most distant part of the catacomb, a small figure that moved. The shoulders twitched. The head was bent and covered with trembling hands, and behind the hands, the mouth wailed and was afraid.
Pipkin?
The crying stopped.
Is that you?
Whispered Tom. A long pause, a trembled insuck of breath, and then...
Yes.
Pip, for cry yai, what you doing there?
I don't know.
Come out.
I can't. I'm afraid.
But Pip, if you stay there...
Tom paused. Pip, he thought, if you stay, you stay forever. You stay with all the silence and the lonely ones. You stand in the long line and tourists come and look at you and buy tickets to look at you some more. You...
Pip,
said Ralph behind his mask,
you gotta come out.
I can't,
Pip sobbed.
They won't let me.
They?
But they knew he meant the long line of mummies. In order to get out, he would have to run the gauntlet between the nightmares, the mysteries, the dreadful ones, the dyers, and the haunts.
They can't stop you, Pip.
Pip said,
oh, yes, they can. Can, said echoes deep in the catacomb. I'm afraid to come out.
And we're, said Ralph. Afraid to go in, thought everyone.
Maybe if we chose one brave one,
said Tom, and stopped. For Pipkin was crying again, and the mummies waiting, and the night so dark in the long tomb hall that you would sink right through the floor if you stepped on it and never move again. The floor would seize your ankles with bony marble and hold you until the freezing cold froze you into a dry dust statue forever.
Maybe if we went in a mob, all of us,
said Ralph. And they tried to move. Like a big spider with many legs, the boys tried to cram through the door. 2 steps forward, 1 step back. 1 step forward, 2 steps back. Wept Pipkin. At which sound they all fell upon themselves, gibbering and scrambled, yelling their dires and frights back to the door. They heard an avalanche of heartbeats, bang, pains in their chests.
Oh, my gosh, what we gonna do? Him afraid to come, us afraid to go, what? What?
Wailed Tom. Behind them, leaning against the wall, was Mound Shroud, forgotten. A little candle flame of smile flickered and went out among his teeth. Here, boys, save him with this. Mound Shroud reached into his dark cloak and brought forth a familiar white sugar candy skull, across the brow of which was written,
Pipkin.
Save Pipkin, lads. Strike a bargain.
With who?
With me and others unnamed. Here, break this skull in 8 delicious bits, boys. Hand 'em round. P for you, Tom, and I for you, Ralph, and half of the other P for you, Hank, the other half for you, J.J., and some of the K for you, boy, and some for you, and here's the I and the final N. Touch the sweet bits, lads. Listen, here's the dark deal. Do you truly want Pipkin to live? Such a fury of protest burst forth at this, Mound Shroud was fair driven back by it. The boys barked like dogs against his so much as questioning their need for Pip's survival. There, there, he curried them, I see you mean it. Well then, we'll each give 1 year from the end of your life, boys?
What?
Said Tom.
I mean it, boys, 1 year. 1 precious year from the far-burned candle-end of your life. With 1 year apiece, you can ransom dead Pipkin.
A year.
The whisper, the murmur, the appalling sum of it ran among them. It was hard to grasp. A year so far away was no year at all. Boys of 11 or 12 cannot guess at men of 70.
A year? A year? Well, sure, why not? Yes.
Think, boys, think. This is no idle bargain struck with nothing. I mean it. It is true and a fact. It is a grave condition you make and a grave bargain you strike. 1 year each of you must promise to give. You won't miss the year now, of course, for you are very young, and I see by touching your minds you cannot even guess the final situation. Only later, 50 years from this night, or 60 years from this dawn, when you are running low on time and dearly wish an extra day or so of fine weather and much joy,
then's when Mr. D for doom,
or Mr. B for bones, will show up with his bill to be paid, or perhaps I will come, old Mound Shroud himself, a friend to lads, and say, deliver. So a year promised must be a year given over. I'll say give, and you must give. What will that mean to each of you? It will mean that those of you who might have lived to be 71 must die at 70. Some of you who might have lived to be 86 must cough up your ghost at 85. That's a great age. A year more or less doesn't sound like much. When the time comes, boys, you may regret. But you will be able to say, this year I spent well, I gave for Pip, I made a loan of life for sweet Pipkin, the fairest apple that ever almost fell too early off the harvest tree. Some of you at 49 must cross life off at 48. Some at 55 must lay them down to forever's sleep at 54. Do you catch the whole thing intact now, boys? Do you add the figures? Is the arithmetic plain? A year. Who will bid 365 entire days from out his own soul to get old Pipkin back? Think, boys. Silence. Then speak. There was a long, brooding silence of arithmetic students doing inward sums. And the sums were very fast indeed. There was no question, though they knew that years from now they might doubt this dreadful haste. Yet what else could they do? Only swim out from shore and save the drowning boy before he sank a last time into a frightening dust. Me, said Tom, I'll give a year. And me, said Ralph. I'm in, said Henry Hank. And me, said all the rest. Do you know what you pledge, boys? You do love Pipkin, then?
Yes, yes.
So be it, boys. Chew and eat, lads. Eat and chew. They popped the sweet bits of candy skull in their mouths. They chewed. They ate. Swallow darkness, boys. Give up your year. They swallowed hard. So hard that their eyes shone bright and their ears banged and their hearts beat. They felt something like a cage of birds let out of their chests and bodies and flying off. Invisible. They saw, but did not see, the years they gave as gifts wing off round the world to settle somewhere in good payment for strange debts. They heard a yell.
Here!
And then,
Hi!
And then,
Come!
Bang, 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 the three words and three sounds of shoes hitting stone, and along the hall and between the rows of mummies which leaned out to stop but did not stop, between the silent shrieks and screams, hell-bent, rushing, racing, flinging his feet, pumping his elbows, puffing his cheeks, shutting his eyes, snorting his nostrils, and bang, bang, banging the floor with his up and down feet came Pipkin. Oh, how he ran.
Look at him come. Come on, Pip. Pip, you're halfway. Look at him race,
said everyone with sugar candy in their mouths, with the honorable name of Pipkin locked in their sweet teeth, with his savor in their jaws, with his fine name on their tongues.
Pip, Pip, Pipkin! Don't stop now, Pip. Don't look back. Don't fall down. Here he comes, three quarters of the way.
Pip ran the gauntlet. He was good and fine and fast and true. Between 100 waiting mummies he ran without touching and did not look back and won the race.
Pip, you did it! You're safe! But Pip kept running. Not only through the gauntlet of dead ones, but the gauntlet of warm, sweating, alive, yelling boys. He plowed them aside and raced upstairs. Gone.
Pip! It's all right. Come back!
They ran up the stairs after.
Where's he going, Mr. Moundshroud?
Well, I should imagine, scared as he is, said Moundshroud, home.
Is Pipkin saved?
Let's go see, boys. Up.
He spun about like a whirlwind. His arms, flung out, cut the air in slicing grabs and swoops. So fast he spun that he made a vacuum, a self-made storm. This cyclone, this huge upsuck of air, then seized the boys by ear, nose, elbow, toe. Like so many leaves, stripped from a tree, they yelled themselves into the sky. Moundshroud, raving, sank up. And they, if that is possible, sank and plummeted after. They hit the clouds like an explosion of gunshot. They followed Moundshroud like a flock of north-rushing birds heading home before their season. The earth seemed to give a turn from north to south. A thousand small villages and towns spun under, alight with candles in tombyards through all of Mexico, alight with candles flickering in pumpkins north of the border across Texas, and then Oklahoma and Kansas and Iowa, and at last Illinois, and at last.
Home! Cried Tom. There's the courthouse! There's my house! There's the Halloween tree!
They swooped once around the courthouse and twice around the thousand pumpkin-burning tree, and a final time around old Moundshroud's tall house with its many gables, many rooms, many gaping windows, high lightning rods, railings, attics, scrollworks, which leaned and groaned in the wind their passage made. Dust sifted out of windows to greet them. Shades flapped in yet other windows like ancient tongues lolling to be diagnosed by wind-borne small doctors of strange medicines. Ghosts withered like white flowers, furling and unfurling in moldered flags which fell to ruin even as they shot by. And the whole house, circled, was like all of Halloween ever. So cried Moundshroud, flapping his antique arms and webs and black silks as he landed on the roof and beckoned the boys to alight and pointed down through an immense sky window through all the levels of his mansion. The boys gathered round the skylight window and stared down a stairwell which opened out at various floors to various times and histories of men and skeletons and dreadful musics played on flute bones.
There it is, boys. Will you look? Do you see? There's our whole 10,000-year flight. There's our whole trip in one place, from caveman to Egyptian to Roman front porch to English harvest field to boneyard in Mexico. Moundshroud lifted the vast pane of glass. The stairway banister, boys, write it down, each to his own time, his own age, his own level. Leap off where your costume fits, where you think you and your disguise, your mask, belong.
Get!
The boys leaped. They sprang down the stairwell to the top landing. Then, one by one, they popped onto the banister and slid, yelling, down through all the floors, all the levels, all the ages of history kept within Moundshroud's incredible mansion. Round about down, round about down, they whisked, they skidded, they shuffled on the waxed rail. Room, thud! J.J. in his ape-man costume landed in the basement. He glanced about. He saw cave paintings, dim smokes and fires, and shadows of hulking gorilla men. Saber-tooths burned their eyes at him from the cindered dark. Down around rush went Ralph, the Egyptian mummified boy, bandaged for all ages, to land on the first floor where Egyptian hieroglyphs strutted in armies of symbol, with squadrons of ancient birds in skies and flocks of beast gods and scuttling golden beetles rolling dung balls down history.
Crash!
Hackles Nibley, with his scythe somehow still flashing in his hands, hit and almost rolled himself to mincemeat on the second floor, where the shadow of Samhain, Druid, god of the dead, raised up his scythe upon a far chamber wall. Bang! George Smith, a Greek ghost, a Roman haunt, landed on the third floor near tar-painted porches which glued old wandering spirits to the sill. Thud! Henry Hank, the witch, plopped down in the fourth landing amid witches leaping bonfires in English, French, German countrysides. Fred Fryer? The fifth floor took him in a heap. The beggar landing among sounds of beggars begging the country roads of Ireland, starving. Wally Babb, the gargoyle himself, flew and crashed on the sixth floor where walls sprouted elbows and limbs and lumps, grimaces of fine gargoyle humors and glees, until finally Skeleton Tom skidded off the banister on the topmost floor to tumble and knock white candy skulls like tenpins in a dire game among the shadows of crouched women by mounds, with miniature skeleton brass bands playing mosquito tunes while Mound Shroud, far above, still on the roof, yelled down, "Well, boys, do you see? It's all one, yes?"
"Yes,"
someone murmured. "Always the same but different, eh? Every age, every time. Day was always over. Night was always coming. And aren't you always afraid, Ape-Man there, or you, Mummy, that the sun will never rise again?"
"Yes,"
more of them whispered. And they looked up through the levels of the great house and saw every age, every story, and all the men in history staring round about as the sun rose and set. Ape-men trembled, Egyptians cried laments, Greeks and Romans paraded their dead, summer fell dead, winter put it in the grave, a billion voices wept. The wind of time shook the vast house, the windows rattled and broke like men's eyes into crystal tears. Then, with cries of delight, 10,000 times a million men welcomed back bright summer suns which rose to burn each window with fire. "Do you see, lads? Think. People vanished forever. They died, oh Lord, they died. But came back in dreams. Those dreams were called ghosts and frightened men in every age." "Ah!" cried a billion voices from attics and basements. Shadows climbed walls like old films rerun in ancient theaters. Puffs of smoke lingered at doors with sad eyes and gibbering mouths. "Night and day, summer and winter, boys. Seed time and harvest. Life and death, that's what Halloween is, all rolled up in one. Noon and midnight. Being born, boys. Rolling over, playing dead like dogs, lads, and getting up again, barking, racing through thousands of years of death each day and each night. Halloween, boys, every night, every single night, dark and fearful, until at last you made it and hid in cities and towns and had some rest and could get your breath. And you began to live longer and have more time, and space out the deaths, and put away fear, and at last have only special days in each year when you thought of night and dawn and spring and autumn and being born and being dead. And it all adds up. 4,000 years ago, 100 years ago, this year, one place or another, but the celebration's all the same.
The Feast of Samhain! The time of the dead ones! All souls, all saints! The Day of the Dead, El Día de Muerte, All Hallows, Halloween.
The boys sent their frail voices up, up through the levels of time, from all the countries and all the ages, naming the holidays which were the same.
Good, lads, good.
Far off, the town clock struck 11:45.
Almost midnight, boys, Halloween's almost over.
But,
cried Tom,
what about Pipkin? We followed him through history, burying him, digging him up, walking him in parades, crying him in wakes. Is or isn't he alive?
Yeah,
said everyone.
Did we save him?
Did you indeed?
Mound Shroud stared. They stared with him across the ravine to a building where lights were going out.
That's his hospital, boys.
but check his house, the final knock of the night, the last grand trick-or-treat. Go ask for final answers. Mr. Marley, see them out. The front door flew wide. Bang! The Marley knocker on the door gaped its bandaged jaw and whistled them farewell as the boys slid down the banisters and raced for the door. They were stopped by a final shout from Mound Shroud.
Boys! Well, which was it? Tonight, with me, trick or treat?
The boys took a vast breath, held it, burst it out.
Gosh, Mr. Mound Shroud, both!
Rap went the Marley knocker, slam went the door, and the boys were gone, running, running down through the ravine and up along the street, gasping hot gusts of air, their masks falling to be trampled until at last they stopped on Pipkin's sidewalk and looked at the far hospital and back at Pipkin's front door.
You go, Tom, you,
said Ralph, and Tom slowly edged up to the house and put his foot on the front step, and then the second step up and approach the door, afraid to knock, afraid to find the final answer about dear old Pipkin. Pipkin dead? Pipkin in the last funeral? Pipkin gone forever? No. He tapped at the door. The boys waited on the sidewalk. The door opened. Tom went in. There was a long moment of the boys on the sidewalk standing cold and letting the wind freeze their most awful thoughts.
Well?
They yelled silently in at the house, the shut door, the dark windows.
Well? Well? What?
And then at last the door opened again, and Tom came out and stood on the porch, not knowing where he was. Then Tom looked up and saw his friends waiting for him a million miles off. Tom leaped off the porch, yelling,
Oh, gosh! Oh, gosh! Oh, gosh!
He ran along the sidewalk, shrieking,
He's okay! He's all right! He's okay! Pipkin's in the hospital, took his appendix out at 9 tonight, got it just in time, doctor says he's great! Pipkin? Hospital? Great?
The air jumped out as if each had been punched in the stomach. Then the air went in and out again in a great rave, a yell, a ragged shout of triumph.
Pipkin! Oh, Pipkin! Pip!
And the boys stood on Pipkin's lawn and the sidewalk in front of Pipkin's porch and house and looked with numb curiosity at each other as their smiles spread and their eyes watered and they yelled and the happy tears ran down their cheeks.
Oh, boy, boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy,
said Tom, exhausted and weeping with happiness.
You can say that again,
said someone, and they all said it again. And they all stood there and had a fine, happy cry. And since the whole night was turning soupy with tears, Tom looked around and revved them up.
Look at Pipkin's house. Don't it look awful? Tell you what we do.
And they ran, and each came back carrying a lit pumpkin and lined them up on Pipkin's porch rail, where they smiled outrageous smiles to wait for Pipkin to come home. And they stood on the lawn and looked at the lovely sight of all those smiles, their costumes tattered upon their arms and shoulders and legs, and the grease paint dripped and running on their faces, and a great, wondrous, happy tiredness gathering in their eyelids and arms and feet, but not wanting to go yet. And the town clock struck midnight. Gung. And gung again to a full count of 12. And Halloween was over. And all about the town, doors were slamming and lights going out. The boys began to drift, saying, Night, and night, and again, night, and some, Good night, but most, night, yes. Night, and the lawn was empty, but Pipkin's porch was just full of candle illumination and warmth and baked pumpkin smell. And ghost and mummy and skeleton and witch and all the rest were back at their own homes, on their own porches, and each turned to look at the town and remember this special night they would never in all their lives ever forget. And they looked across the town at one another's porches, but especially on and over across the ravine, to that great house where, at the very top, Mr. Moundshroud stood on his spike-railinged roof. The boys waved, each from his own porch. The smoke curling out of the high Moundshroud Gothic chimney fluttered, motioned, waved back. And still more doors were slamming to lock all around town. And with each slam, one more pumpkin, and then another, and another, and another on the huge Halloween tree snuffed out by the dozens, by the hundreds, by the thousands. Doors banged, pumpkins went blind, snuffed candles smoked delicious smokes. The witch hesitated, went in, shut the door. A witch-faced pumpkin on the tree went dark. The mummy stepped into his house and shut his door. A pumpkin with the face of a mummy extinguished its light. And finally, the last boy in all the town remaining alone on his veranda, Tom Skelton in his skull and bones, hating to go in, wanting to wring the last dear drop from his favorite holiday in all the year, sent his thoughts on the night air toward the strange house beyond the ravine.
Mr. Moundshroud, who are you?
And Mr. Moundshroud, way up there on the roof, sent his thoughts back.
I think you know, boy. I think you know. Will we meet again, Mr. Moundshroud?
Many years from now, yes, I'll come for you. And a last thought from Tom.
Oh, Mr. Moundshroud, will we ever stop being afraid of nights and death?
And the thought returned. When you reach the stars, boy, yes, and live there forever, all the fears will go, and death himself will die. Tom listened, heard, and waved quietly. Mr. Moundshroud, far off, lifted his hand. Click. Tom's front door went shut. His pumpkin, like a skull, on the vast tree, sneezed and went dark. The wind stirred the great Halloween tree, which was now empty of all light save one pumpkin at the very top. A pumpkin with Mr. Moundshroud's eyes and face. At the top of the house, Mr. Moundshroud leaned out, took a breath, blew. His candle in his pumpkin head on the tree fluttered, died. Miraculously, smoke curled out of his own mouth, his nose, his ears, his eyes, as if his soul had been extinguished within his lungs at the very moment the sweet pumpkin gave up its incensed ghost. He sank down into his house. The roof trapdoor closed. The wind came by. It rocked all the dark, smoking pumpkins on the vast and beautiful Halloween tree. The wind seized a thousand dark leaves and blew them away up over the sky and down over the earth toward the sun that must surely rise. Like the town, the tree turned off its embered smiles and slept. At 2 in the morning, the wind came back for more leaves.
This concludes the reading of The Halloween Tree by Ray Bradbury.